This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi friends, and welcome back to another episode of Open House, a fresh, fun, and real podcast where I, Louise Rumble, invite you inside the therapy room with me to learn from some of the very best psychologists, therapists, and sex and intimacy coaches that I have found. No topic is off the table, no question too juicy, and no experience too shameful. At Open House, everyone is welcome. And we're on a mission to develop a new mental health experience for all, because we believe that true happiness is coming home to yourself under the layers and layers of you that society has told you to be. As ever, please remember that this podcast is for entertainment purposes only, and you should always seek professional medical help when necessary. Now, let's get into it, and I'll see you on the other side. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Open House podcast. Today, I am joined by Stephanie, and we are going to be talking about something that we all need to hear. We're going to be discussing how to survive the holiday season. It's looming. It's actually just around the corner. The holiday season shows up differently for all of us. I feel like for some of us, we're so excited about us, and we think that the holidays are the best time of the year. Some of us maybe feel apprehensive, some of us feel stressed, and some of us might feel downright dread or even deep sadness and grief, depending on what you have gone through this year. Today, Stephanie and I are going to be discussing why this is such an overwhelming time of the year, and I guess why it's just so triggering for so many of us. We're going to be discussing labels in the family, emotions, suppression, family dynamics, those questions that we get asked that we just don't want to answer, and more. So Stephanie, welcome back to the Open House podcast. I'm so happy to have you here. How are you today?
Oh, I'm so happy to be back, Louise. And I'm good. I'm feeling great. I mean, as you said, even myself as a mental health professional, I'm still impacted by the holidays. I still have a family, and there is a lot of focus now on coming together and enjoying the time that we may have off work. No matter what you are celebrating during the holidays or how you celebrate, it's this feeling that we are supposed to be around our family. We're supposed to celebrate, and we're also supposed to keep up a bit of pretense, I think. A lot of people are saying to themselves, it's just one day, or it's just a few days, or it's just a week, not realizing that their nervous system is feeling, you know, that huge trigger and that dysregulation.
I'm so happy that you referenced the nervous system already, because the more we go into biology on this podcast, people understand how deep this goes. I'd love it if you could just explain a little bit how, I guess, the holiday season is the ultimate nervous system dysregulator, because there's stressful cues from all different angles.
Oh, 100%. And don't forget, a lot of us are children walking around in adult bodies. We're coping as children in adult bodies, but our external stresses are adult stresses. So you've been working all year. It's leading up to this time now where you're supposed to relax. A lot of us have identity wrapped up in hard work, motivating ourselves, going to work every day. And this is the time of year where we start to evaluate, what do I want to do at the start of next year? How do I want to slow down? How do I want to spend my time? Do I want to be around loved ones? Do I want to be alone? So to go back into these environments and know that you are potentially going to feel childlike again, or the dynamics that you're used to with your parents, your family, your siblings, those dynamics are going to replay. It's so hard to know, will I have the skill set to do this? Can I manage this? Can I bring forth some uncomfortable conversations? And can I heal in this environment the way I've been healing on my own?
Oh, yeah, we're going to get into childhood wounds and labeling in just a second. But I think that's such an interesting point you made around at the end of the year, you're sort of holding the stress from the year. I think when we go into a new year, we're like, this year is going to be so great. And then I know we're recording this in November. I know that I'm tired. I have worked so fucking hard this year. I have questions around what does next year hold for me, business, relationship, future. Even last week, my dad was like, I think you should have a baby. I was like, I did not ask you for any thoughts on what I should do with my body, whether I should get married, whether I should have a baby. And that came from a good place. And we're going to get into those statements and those questions too.
Oh, definitely, Louise. People are now bracing themselves for conversations they don't want because guess what? Every year is the same. It plays out the same. The dynamics play out the same. So we are preparing for that. And don't forget, we're always talking about how our subconscious is like this CD just playing in the background all the time. And a lot of our physical reactions are in response to past emotional times. Whatever the holidays mean for you, whatever connection you've made to the holidays, whatever meaning and narrative you have around them, it's going to start creeping up on you and you're not going to be able to escape through work. Everyone's going to be doing the same thing. So you have the choice of being able to isolate yourself and keep away from everyone or going back in there. And like you said, bracing yourself, like we said, just bracing yourself for what's to come because you know how it goes. And one thing that I do want to touch on, Louise, is that how we operate as humans, we are the only species actually that treats the winter as a new year and a new phase. Everything in nature is dying off. It's slowing down. It's resetting. It's hidden away. So we are now going into this time trying to assess what we really want to do during this time. Do we want to celebrate? Do we want to slow down? Do we want to start some new habits? And we're the only species that actually does that, Louise, because everyone else, everything else in the world is slowing down and we are starting to ramp up. It's new year, new me, all of that. So being aware that your body, your physical body is being pushed into a cycle from society that it's not really aligned with. So you're already going to be feeling down, sluggish, tired. It's been the first year out of the pandemic that we've really been able to get back into our socializing, our gatherings, work life. A lot of people are still trying to come to terms with being back in the workplace, being back in family settings. And it might be the first proper December, November, December that we have with our families that we didn't have before then.
This is fascinating because my mum has always said that as well. She said that the winter is actually supposed to be the time for rejuvenation and nurturing, staying inside, seasons come and seasons go. But I think that with city life, particularly that period before Christmas, the run up to Christmas is tons of Christmas parties, tons of, you know, it just feels like this one long blur. And I think it's so interesting because we kind of need to slow down after that. But then we get thrown into the family home. And you can't slow down in the family home because you can't hide because there's like six of you at home in a four bedrooms or 12 of you at home in a five bedroom or, you know, whatever the setup is for you guys. It's very time intensive and it's very emotionally intensive. What advice would you give for anyone that's in a family home but doesn't feel like they can take space to stay regulated, but they know that they need to?
Like you said, Louise, people are building an awareness now towards a sense of self. Why do I feel bad? Why do I feel good? What are my triggers? A lot of people listening to this have already acknowledged a lot of trauma and have perhaps at times managed to avoid conversations, avoid interactions with people. And then here we are. We are now at home, whether we have children or not, whether we're staying with family. A lot of people don't even have family to go to. So we're really forced to sit there with this, whether it's a lonely feeling, whether it's a dysregulation, whether it's being triggered by other people, we're really forced to then sit there and assess how we're feeling, which is so foreign to most people. A lot of people don't know how to articulate how they're feeling. They don't even know how to identify it. So being able to do that is a skill that people are going to need going into the holidays. You're going to have an awareness of what triggers you. And that just means sitting with a list of a pen and paper and sitting with a list and saying, what do I find triggering when I'm in the holidays? What happened for us last year? Now, it could be that if you are alone, perhaps all of the adverts that you find, all of these like 12 family members sharing food and sitting around the table, or whether it's Thanksgiving or sharing gifts, and perhaps you don't have very much money this year. So if these things are triggering for you, it's knowing how to separate yourself from them, separate your identity and the narrative from them, being able to soothe yourself, creating your own traditions, your own rituals. So going for walks when you need it, keeping the TV off if it feels triggering for you, not being around people who are drinking alcohol. And something that we have to acknowledge, Louise, which a lot of people are scared to mention, is that domestic violence really ramps up over the holidays because, again, we're at home, alcohol is involved, and people are really vulnerable to the emotions and feelings and abuse of other people. So it might be worth just sitting there and acknowledging some of these interactions, acknowledging what you lose in the holidays or what you gain in the holidays. And if it's something as small as, I don't like people cutting me off when I'm talking, or I don't like it when I'm having to help out with things and my brothers, for example, don't have to help in the kitchen, but the women seem to have to do that. Wherever you find a trigger, something that causes this horrible dysregulation within your body, sitting with that and holding some space for yourself, some compassion, being able to process things by yourself before you go into those environments so that you know you have the skills, you know you can walk away, separate yourself, set some boundaries. It's all about the communication now going into the holidays.
There is so much you said that I want to get into, like the loneliness piece and the belief that Christmas should be a certain way and the pressure and the Christmas adverts and the gifts and all of that. We're going to get into those things. But first of all, I want to get into the labels that we hold in our family, because I think that we're talking about triggers and dysregulation. I think that one of the biggest triggers is being treated a certain way that we feel like doesn't align with who we are today. I'd love it if you could just tell me and explain to everyone listening how we basically develop these family labels and these family stereotypes and archetypes, perhaps when we were younger, that come through into adulthood today. And maybe you could give me some examples of some of those as well.
How you have to see this, Louise, is that we now, like sort of our age group and our generation, we are third generation trauma. That's what we are representing. So first generation trauma, you've got war, famine, migration, you have, again, domestic violence, sexism, patriarchism. Then you have second generation, which is suppressing our emotions, divorce, separation, everything that's coming to light that wasn't there in the first generation because it wasn't allowed is then starting to come forth in the second generation. The third generation that we're going to have identity issues. We're going to struggle with compassion, intimacy, attachment, because we are burying all of these feelings that have epigenetically not been acknowledged for those other two generations. So we are carrying a lot of trauma as third generation sort of trauma survivors. So just first acknowledging that your place in the family is not always going to be completely stable, no matter how loving and caring you are and how supportive your family might be. There is no such thing as the perfect family. And I've already touched on this with you before, Louise, that so many people will come to therapy and you're able to see what they suffer with because it's blatant, it's obvious. The drinking father, the submissive mother, there's so much in there that you can target. But I have these people that come to me and they say, right, I have trauma, I have attachment issues, I've acknowledged, I've listened to your podcast, I've done this, I've done all of these things, but I come from a really great family. And I cannot pinpoint where my trauma is. And one of these things you just mentioned, Louise, is the labeling. And that is so tough to deal with because what happens is when a family pretends that everything's okay, when a family pretends that everyone's safe and everyone's getting along, one person becomes the container for all of the pain, all of the emotions, they hold it. So someone in that family setting is sacrificing. Someone is able to see what's going on. Now, that family has two choices. It can either unpack all of the trauma and everyone can be assigned blame and responsibility. You can sit down and say, well, you played this part, grandpa played that part, and dad could have done more of this. Most people don't want to do that, or they don't have the awareness to do that. So the second option is to create a problem child, a dysfunctional child. And it's this constant highlighting of that child's negativity. Oh, that's just the way you are. Or why are you like this? Or you've upset your mom again. That is so much easier for families to do than actually unpack all of the trauma. Now, if one child has a label, the other children need labels too. So that means that they are assigned a role in the family system. And the reason this happens, Louise, is because our parents, as second generation trauma survivors, do not understand self-esteem issues or positive reinforcement. So if you believe your child is shy, what are you going to do? You are going to support them, offer support in social settings. You are going to speak to them about when they feel confident, where they feel confident, who they feel shy around, who they feel confident around. You are going to compliment their efforts to socialize. Who has time to do that? Most moms don't have time to do that, especially not during the holidays, especially not when you've got 3-4 children, especially not when you've got financial problems. So it's easier just to say, oh, she's just shy. Yeah. Or, oh, yeah, he's just not very talkative. Because you would have to really use the positive reinforcement to help that child and support that child. So again, there are many labels, goody two shoes, teacher's pet. Oh, you're the smart one. We spoke about this last night, you and I. For me, Stephanie, oh, she's so academic, not a bit of common sense. That makes the rest of my family feel comfortable because it gives them the common sense. They then get to show up in other ways. So when someone's fixing something, Stephanie doesn't get that responsibility. But if Stephanie, if we need a letter writing or we need support in therapy, we'll go to Stephanie. So everyone gets to perform and keep up the pretense in those labels. And I know everyone listening now is going to be like, okay, what's my label? So yeah, that's how people function, Louise, in those labels.
Yeah, and I actually wrote down some labels whilst you were talking because so many came to me from my family, from my friends' families. I wrote down the stressed out mum in the kitchen, the dad who doesn't help at all, maybe the sober sibling that's trying to stay sober. You've got the drunk sibling, the one that kicks off, they're drinking too much. Then you've got the problem child, like you said. I also wrote down the disconnected child in their bedroom, like the person that just like does not want to be with the family. Maybe they just sit on their phone all the time. And then you've got the domesticated ones that help in the kitchen and the undomesticated ones. And then, of course, you have all of the other layers, like the grandparents, which I don't have any grandparents, so I forget what kind of categories that they go into. But there are so many labels. And I think that you've always said that you were like the smart one, but with no common sense. I feel like I was also labeled in that box as well, but I was also labeled probably as like the undomesticated one because my mom just does everything herself. So then there's this power dynamic between people not helping, but no one helps because like no one can do it the way my mom does it and we'll do it wrong if we try to help. So then it's like, you never help me. No one's ever helping me around the house. And there's just like a lot of conflict there, even on Christmas Day. So we all have to really pull together and say in the morning, okay, who's doing what? What is today going to look like? Should we make a plan? And that really removes like the romantic element of the holiday season. But I think for us as a family, we've found that that is more helpful. Do you think it's helpful to have these kind of conversations before the holiday season starts? Or do you think you should just handle it as you go along?
I think a lot of people now, especially in our generation, are just really exploring who they are right now, whether you are in a same-sex relationship, whether you are transgender, however you identify. So there are very few places that some people feel safe or feel secure. And it's so interesting that we give the assumption that family life is where we feel safe and family life is where we feel like we belong. And oftentimes it's not. It's the place that we feel the most judged, especially people that are perhaps trying for children. And then you've got one sister who's got about 5 or 6 children, and then you are there struggling to get pregnant. Or, you know, again, you're firstly introducing your new partner to the family. And so the pretense is then ramped up even further. And they're starting to divulge some of your deepest, darkest secrets to this new person. So there's a lot of betrayal there, a lot of fakeness. And I think it's so hard because the labels, they work to an extent because they allow us to function alongside each other. And what they also do is they give us a bit of a break. They give us a bit of peace. But we have to be mindful now moving forward how much peace, how much temporary peace these labels give us compared to the long-term uncomfortability. One thing we do lose as children is our curiosity. That is stamped out of us very quickly because people don't have time to answer our questions. People do not display healthy coping mechanisms that align with what they're saying. Their actions often don't match their words. So we lose our curiosity because we're often not getting that need met. I think to go into these holidays with some curiosity again, and by that I mean get to know why mom is so domesticated and why she goes into this martyrdom and she loves providing for her children and cooking and cleaning and do all of these physical things. Now, you and I have touched on this before, and we know that sometimes people are doing that as a form of avoidance because maybe they're not good at accepting presents or they don't want to sit around and have a conversation. I'm always very aware at parties and gatherings, Louise, of the people that are constantly helping, plates of food, washing up, doing this, because I know that they're avoiding difficult conversations. They're avoiding the connection. Now, the craziest thing is, a lot of the time when we're in these environments, our body will go into the freeze response that we've spoken about in the past. It will shut down because guess what? You can't be the child that ruins Thanksgiving or ruins Christmas or ruins the holidays. You can't be that child. So usually some of the things that you would say are not being said. If it's June, you can speak up. If it's August, you can speak up. December, absolutely not. Just suppress it. And you think by saying to yourself, oh, it's just the way mom is, or it's just the way my brother is, and just getting through, you think you're connecting, you're actually not. You're so disconnected. And what will happen is you will disconnect, and one of your aunts might say something really prejudiced or sexist or racist, whatever. We all have these family members who will voice their opinions unwarranted. And then you come up with your freeze response later on and you go, oh, I wish I'd said this, or I wish I'd said that. There are often people who will dominate the conversation because they are able to command a room. So we have to be mindful that going into these situations, you don't have to have the conversations first. But if you can go into these situations and be curious about your parents, why is it okay for dad to sit around whilst mom does everything? You don't have to directly go in there and say, dad, do you think you should help mom a bit more? Because I just find it strange that every single year you manage to sit on your ass and mom does everything. So you don't want to go in there and do that, but just go in there and ask your mom's dynamic. What was it like for you growing up, mom, when you had Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever celebrations you have? Now, that conversation is going to create a bit more connection for you. Connection is what we lack when we are immobilized, when we go into the freeze response. So anything that makes you feel more connected is going to pull you out of that sort of dorsal vagal response. It's going to make sure that you are connecting back. So anything that gives you that connection, anything that brings about a lighter form of conversation for you, that is going to help you so much. You don't have to hide away. You don't have to avoid. You don't have to shut down. Just get curious. And like I said, create some new traditions. But I wouldn't explore these conversations first. I definitely wouldn't do that, because what happens is people start to get defensive. Well, if you don't want to come, then don't come. Or, well, why don't you just go and do something differently and we'll have our own celebrations or whatever. So being aware that people are also going to be triggered during that time, just ask some really great questions. All of the questions that we speak about on this podcast. What was it like growing up for you when this happened or that happened? If you had a mom who had no money growing up and now all of a sudden there's luxury everywhere and abundance everywhere, she might not feel comfortable in that. So this is what we have to be mindful of. How are these other people interpreting and integrating this experience? And how can I bring forth some connection to my own physical body and to other people?
Yes, I could not agree more about that whole fighting other people's battles. Like, I've definitely done that in my parents' marriage. Like, we've spoken about that often. And that's something that I'm not going to do this year because it just adds so much stress and drama. And I think for the people that go the other way, that they don't freeze, they go into fight or flight. Understanding the amygdala hijack that's going on in our body, when you want to snap at someone, when you want to be like, fuck you, like, don't ask me that. Like, why would you ask me that? Why would you say that? Particularly when older generations, like you said, say things that are racist or sexist, things that they maybe don't even know that they're saying. It's very easy to be triggered. And I think having that understanding of what's going on in the biology within us can help us to stop and pause. And I would either say, I prefer not to talk about that right now. I'm going to take that on board and maybe we could talk about it another time. or actually just breathe through it and leave the room and then regulate on your own outside. What are your thoughts on if someone says, like, let's talk about you having kids, Louise, and I don't want to talk about that. Or if they say, why are you still single? You're such a good girl. You're such a nice boy. Why haven't you found someone yet? That is fucking triggering. What would you advise someone to do in those kinds of situations?
I mean, it's so tempting just to turn around and say, because of you lot, isn't it? Because of you, you're messed me up. So a lot of people, like you said, will go into that fight response and start bringing accountability to the room, and it can get quite uncomfortable. What I would say, Louise, is, as you said, if you know that you have boundaries around this, I would definitely bring that up with that person before. So say it's on the day, say that's the day that you're all getting together and you get there. You might just say, look, I know you have some questions around where I'm at in my life, but if you could just leave those off the table today so that we can all have a great time together. Now, when people ask me about boundaries, they'll say to me, you know, but I've tried setting boundaries, or I've tried asking, or I've tried saying this, not realizing that you're trying to set boundaries with people that also don't have boundaries. And so they don't respect your boundaries. You know, you're communicating this for a response, for a reaction, for a change in behavior. And I need people to understand that the boundaries are not for the changed behavior. The boundaries are because you have taught yourself for so long that silence is easier, that just shutting down is easier, that just avoiding vulnerability is easier. Now, what we need to be doing in these moments is cultivating compassion for ourselves, not minimizing our needs, being able to speak up. It does not matter what the other person responds to you. It doesn't matter if they change their behavior. It doesn't matter if they change their view. You are essentially saying, I am no longer a vulnerable child who can't stand up to you. I am no longer a child that you can say, you know, go and play, go away. Children should be seen and not heard. I'm an adult with a voice, with opinions, with preferences, with choice. And I get to use that. And again, that boundary is whether they respect it or not, or whether you can engage with them after that. It's, we don't really want to rely on people, you know, setting boundaries. We always offer grace. Always offer grace first, because it kind of softens the blow towards the boundary. So it would sound something like, say if someone said, I've been waiting on you getting married, and when you're getting married and you're sat there with your partner that you've been with for years and you've both decided that a wedding wouldn't financially benefit you, whatever, or maybe you've just gone for a breakup or you're having a bad time, and they say this to you, offering grace and saying, I love how important commitment is to you. Marriage is important to you, but for me right now in my life, I have other priorities outside of that. And we do live in different times right now. And we have other goals that we're trying to meet before we go down the aisle. So just letting them know, I have my own choices, and using your voice. And it's so funny, Louise, that you said about these old people that come up with things, because these are people that we love. These are people that have helped raise us. These are people that have literally done so much for us physically, but emotionally they may have lacked somewhere. And so we have this conflict. Like, my grandma is the cutest woman. I love her to pieces. But last year, when all the Meghan Markle stuff was happening with Princess Kate, my grandma reads all the newspapers. She watches all of her soaps, and she just takes in everything the government tell her. And she says to me, well, that Meghan got her eye wiped, didn't she? And I'm like, what do you mean? Thought she could come from Canada and get herself a nice golden carriage. So I'm like, I don't think she thought that, because she was marrying Harry, and Harry's like 17th in line for the throne or something. So, and I was just tempted to just go, oh, it's just my nan. Just my nan. And I didn't. I kept challenging her, and I said, oh, okay. I said, so what do you think has caused her to not get the golden carriage then? Well, she's been really mean to that Kate. So, so mean to that Kate. And I said, oh, yeah, it sounds awful. But I did see in the newspaper, actually, that Kate had made Meghan cry on her wedding day. And she goes, yeah, but you can't believe everything you read. And I'm just like, you are literally quoting everything you've read. And I said, you sound really prejudiced. And it was so hard to have that conversation with this 90-year-old woman, because I don't want to challenge her. I don't want to bring her opinions to the forefront and hold her accountable. But also, we have to do that, because it's using our voice and allowing someone to go away and think about what they're saying and how they're saying it. Because if we don't do it, then who will? And it will repeat and repeat, and every holiday will feel the same for us.
I agree with that totally. And I think that it's very difficult when some people are stuck in their ways, and there are some people that will never change. That's just how they're going to be. But there are also some family members that will be receptive. And I feel like in the Rumble household, me and my sister-in-law, we're like big feminists and really very like open-minded to everything. We will both say, you can't say that to my parents. And then we will explain, this is why you can't say that. And this is what you should say instead. And to be fair to my parents, they're both very receptive. Sometimes they're like, oh, wow, like I didn't realize that. And they do take it on board. So I think that, like you said, having the conversation from a place of compassion and trying to like educate gently, not that it's our job to educate everyone, but, you know, direct family members, yes, we can have these conversations. You can see if they're receptive. There are always going to be some people that are not receptive. Some people that do not care, will not adhere to your boundaries, will just get drunk and slap your ass and be that creepy uncle and whatever the label is. For those people, the people that aren't receptive, for the people that are most likely to trigger us, do you think it's okay to take a wide berth? Because I know we say you should never emotionally suppress, but when we're in an enclosed space with some people that are not receptive to change, do you think it is just okay to say, okay, we're not going to see eye to eye here. I'm just going to get through the holiday season the best I can?
Yeah, I mean, there's being able to communicate, and then there's also having expectations around who people are and what they represent and knowing what their limitations are. Because like you said, Louise, you've got the information and the expertise to back up a lot of what you say to your parents. Some people don't have that. Some people, again, going into that freeze mode, might not be able to defend themselves and will sulk, shut down, change the room, leave the house, go and have a good moan with one of their other family members. And sometimes that feels good. That feels good to go and do that. But ultimately, what we want to be doing is we want to be setting a different narrative. So like I said, with the curiosity, if you can get curious rather than getting defensive, if you can ask a simple question, where did you learn that? Or why does it make you feel that way? You don't have to even defend yourself, because what you're doing is you're asking the question. And when you ask that question, you will find that the person's deepest thoughts come to the surface. You'll read their facial expressions and you will see that they either don't know or it's from an insecurity. Again, I know I always give you these examples, but on my mum's side of the family, they're all very curvy. Everyone would just huge foodies. And growing up, I was very slight. And it was constantly my auntie would always say, oh, she'd go to my mum, what are you feeding her? Are you feeding her properly? And I was a normal size. It was that they were all bloody overweight. So I was constantly critiqued to the point where I would pile more on my like Christmas dinner so she could see me eating. Look, I do eat. Look at me. So we want to be careful that we're not adopting habits or going into patterns and behaviors that feel out of alignment for us. You don't have to address everything. You don't have to bring everything to the table. But what you can do is say, do you know what? I don't want to engage in this. I don't want to participate in this. If you have a safe person outside of your family, let them know before you go and spend time with your family that you're going to need some extra support. So, hey, listen, can I FaceTime you on this day? Because I know that I'm going to feel super triggered. If there's something that you know brings you back to self, a certain song, a certain smell, if you can tap into that so that you are not completely dissociating from the experience, it will allow your body to still stay connected and, again, create a new experience for yourself. And you'll find that when you start to have these curious conversations and ask these questions, those people will stop asking you the questions. They'll have to self-reflect. It might be that you have a conversation and you say, why do you feel like this about same-sex relationships? Or why do you feel like this about Black people? Or why do you feel like this about the government? If you just ask people those questions, chances are they will reveal an insecurity underneath there. And that is so validating to hear that these people are actually operating from a vulnerable place. They just don't know it.
This is such helpful information. I am so glad we are doing this episode. I've already learned so much from you that I didn't even know before this holiday season. And I'm also really glad that you referenced food there, because I think that it's very triggering for a lot of us, men and women, but potentially particularly more women. And we get to the Christmas season, and if you're anything like me, all you want to do, you're inherently lazy inner child who never gets to be lazy the whole year, wants to lie on the sofa in front of the fire, eat shit all day long, watch movies, eat more shit, there's another pudding, blah, 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 blah. And for a small while, that can feel really good. Like for me, there is nothing better than going home, wrapping up warm on the sofa and just eating naughty food. But then we get into that period between Christmas and New Year where everyone jokes that it's like the 37th of December where you've kind of totally lost track of what's going on. And then you start to feel a bit like, oh shit, this has been like going on for a while here. And then we're sort of like, it's okay though, because in January, I'm going to start afresh. But then 1st of January rolls around and you're like, oh, okay, today's the day I'm supposed to be starting afresh. But now I just feel like soft and out of shape. And like, I don't feel good in my jeans. In fact, the thought of wearing jeans, we never do that over the holiday season. So I wanted to talk about keeping an element of balance and real life in this holiday bubble. My question for you is, do you think it's helpful to try and bring some outside reality into the family bubble this Christmas?
Yeah, I mean, all of the work that we are doing on ourselves day to day, it's so tempting to go, that's just for me. That isn't for me in this environment. Because again, you are going to buy into that label about yourself because everyone functions better in that label. It allows them, like you said, the creepy uncle. Everyone knows he's the creepy uncle, so he gets to be creepy. The stressed out mom in the kitchen, she gets to be the stressed out mom because everyone knows she's the stressed out mom. So we have to be careful about leaning towards identities that we have been given. Because for a lot of people who are super powerful in their careers or quite dominant in their relationships, you get back into the home and you find that that power shift impacts you more than you realize. Now, what we will do is we'll look for external things to control. We're going to be looking at food, drink, again, other people. We're going to get controlling because we have a loss of control, really, a sense of inner chaos that we're now dealing with. And we are going to resort to the childhood coping mechanisms that we used around our family. So you might be super domesticated at home and have everything in tip-top condition. But the minute you get around your mom, around your parents, you then feel quite childlike and a bit useless and a bit in the way. Or it could be that you have parents who are quite emotionally immature. You know, there's going to be some big arguments that you might have to get involved in. Or again, there could be really big changes that have happened this year that don't really get brought to attention until the holidays, you know, new family members, new marriages, new connections, and stepbrothers, stepsisters, stepmoms, stepdads. And there's also this question around, where am I spending the holidays? Where does my loyalty lie? So we've got all of that going on. If you can maintain something for you during this time that connects with your identity, and you know that about yourself, that's what you're going to go back to. And that's what we have to bring into it. So it could be, as you said, you know, if it's to do with food and drink and all of that, if you know that you are going to feel super triggered after the holidays and being around people and eating a lot of food, it might be that you make sure you've got some classes booked in, not even just gym, but just classes booked in, a breathwork class, yoga class, so that you're having that connection and then back to your body. If someone says to you, what would you like for a gift, a present, maybe ask for things that feel motivating for you, a new journal, a gym set, you know, a pair of trainers, whatever it might be, so that you are subconsciously aware that there is something you can still be doing outside of that. For a lot of people, journaling is huge, being able to write down their feelings and thoughts. What I would say as well, Louise, I know I've spoken about this on the podcast before, is having a scheduled worry time. So day to day throughout the holidays, set yourself an alarm. And it might be in the evening, it could be in the morning, and you set that alarm for 20 minutes and you sit down for 20 minutes and you just write down everything you're concerned about, everything that you're worried about, everything that's triggering you, where all your fears are. And then when that 20-minute alarm goes off, you just stop and then you go on with your day. And what happens is you keep going back to this 20 minutes and you find that I only need 10 minutes today. I only need 5 minutes today, because when you're giving yourself this time, or something big will happen in the day and you'll say, got my scheduled worry time at 7 p.m. tonight, so I'm not going to worry about this now. You're essentially connecting through that Pavlovian conditioning. You're connecting a certain time with time to worry and giving yourself that time so the rest of the day feels free so that you can relax and chill out. So even that is super helpful in the holidays. But being mindful again, Louise, that we are supposed to be shutting down and hibernating. We are not supposed to be starting new gym routines and starting this new life in 2024. That's not feasible. And you wonder why mid-January you're so disheartened and upset with yourself that you failed, when it's dark outside at 3 p.m., 4 p.m., and in the morning you can't get up. So being aware of your own physical needs.
Yeah, that's so helpful. I think for me, knowing that my bedroom is my safe space and always has been, it gives me permission to go to my bedroom if things are getting too overwhelming. But what I've learned now is not to go for 2 hours, just to go for a little bit, just a little bit, allow my nervous system to calm down. Not so it gets to the point where, oh, dad comes in, are you going to come downstairs? I'll go downstairs. My brother's like, oh, you know, you're always upstairs, like how it used to be. But just being able to take myself out, I think, has been really helpful. But knowing that there can be a limit to that, like a short regulation limit. And the same thing, like in the evening, that is my time. Like I will make my bath time amazing. I'll buy like the Epsom bath salts and I'll get some candles and I will lie in the bath. Maybe I'll watch Netflix. Maybe I'll just listen to some music. Maybe I'll go to bed after that and I'll put my salt lamp on, which makes me feel like I'm literally in the womb. And it's just like that warmth, being able to be on my own and have a bit of regulation and also a bit of nourishment, I think for me, makes me really enjoy going home because it's not just like stressful from all angles. And I love what you said about not just like throwing yourself into a new gym routine. I think if you can go out for a walk, amazing. If you have a dog, take the dog for a walk. Maybe you can do like a Pilates class, just something online, just to keep you moving. It doesn't have to be like heavy training, but I do think that doing something to interjunct, I don't even think that's the word, whatever that word is, like, so it's not just like this 3.5-4 week period of crazy eating is really, really helpful. Now, before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to talk about? I'd quite like to talk about the people that are going through deep sadness, grief. Maybe they've lost a parent, a grandparent, a sibling. Maybe they've lost a relationship that spent the last 2 years, 5 years, 10 years there at Christmas with them. Do you have any advice for the intense grief and sadness that can come with the holiday period?
It's so important to acknowledge that, Louise, because as you said, we've spoken so much about being around family and making sure that we're owning who we are and tapping into our identity. And we're assuming that most people are going home to these huge, loving, warm families. And just knowing that we are catalysts for change is huge. We are going into these environments with so much power and control that you didn't have as a child. I think that's so important to note here. And, you know, if you know that when you are with your family that everyone just watches movies and no one really speaks, maybe just put some Christmas music on in the background and start some conversations. Start some games if you can. You can also be a catalyst for great positive changes. You know, we're not here saying our family is so terrible and awful and, you know, and I'm just going to shut down and hide away from them. Being able to say, how do I bring everyone back together with a different narrative and different stories? And again, creating different rituals. So hot chocolates at a certain time or Boxing Day cinema, like you said, a walk in the local forest, planning things. And also making sure that when you come out of that environment, rather than it being too extreme, so going in, you've had one episode of life, and this applies to you as well, Louise, because I know it's so different leaving Mexico and going home. So if you are going from two extremes, you're going to feel triggered, you're going to feel upset because you're going from two extremes. So if you can practice a lot of self-care before the holidays, if you can slow down, prioritize yourself, start treating yourself how you want to treat yourself in those environments, that will be huge. And then that leads me on to what you just said. There are people who couldn't think of anything worse than just being around people right now. They don't want to have conversations. They are truly suffering. And the hardest thing with grief, especially with therapy, is that we cannot really change what's happened, any kind of loss. Now, what we can do is accompany people. So accompany them through the grief, sort of hold their hand, acknowledge the importance of those people that they've lost. Now, what I would suggest is that it will be so easy to leave anyone that you have lost out of those celebrations because it feels a lot safer. But if you can, again, create new rituals around that grief and remembering who this person was, remembering what you loved about them, you can even buy them a little gift if you need to, if that's going to make you feel better. So many people have different ways of connecting. Some people just don't want to speak about it. Other people want to speak about it, but don't want to make other people feel comfortable. Just remembering as well that if you are dealing with anyone that is going through grief, be mindful of movies like P.S. I Love You, where, you know, her partner dies and all of that. So there are many movies that you'll end up putting on and not realizing someone's just lost someone. If you are collectively dealing with grief, having those open conversations around what have we lost here? We love this person. What did they mean to us? What did they bring to this family? And if you do want to be alone, I want you to understand that this whole togetherness, unity thing, that has always been the basis and foundation of the holidays, but actually the marketing around it has become quite toxic, because I don't know any families really that sit around the way they do on the adverts. And I know a lot of people right now are financially struggling and haven't got finances to be able to do what these adverts are doing. It's designed to make you spend money. It's designed to send you into a feeling of, oh, I've got to do this, got to do that. People are rushing around on Christmas Eve or during Thanksgiving, trying to get enough food in, trying to make sure they have everything. And a lot of people cannot do it. So if you can create something that just makes you feel more connected to yourself, if you do want to be alone, if you want to be with people, making sure that the things you're connecting over are going to be things that are not money oriented, financially oriented, even doing a secret Santa with your family and with your friends. But in terms of grief, the hardest thing with loneliness and grief, Louise, is that you can't just through therapy say, here's how to not be lonely, because loneliness is, I don't feel safe enough around other people, or there are not people here for me, or I don't have anyone. And you can't talk someone out of that. All you can do is provide them with some space that they need to feel safe, or like I said, friendship, offering. If you have anyone around you that you know doesn't have a family setting, make sure you're bringing them in, inviting them. One of the things that does bring us out of freeze response is community. And I've been saying to my clients recently, are you in the house? Are you in the house? Because yes, your therapy is incredible. We're working on you. And a lot of people have never really spoken about themselves throughout their life. They're like, whoa, I get to speak about myself. But we are actually lacking on a generational level. We are lacking community. We don't have community anymore. We don't have places where we can go and just offload or say, do you know what? I do feel lonely. I've got people around me, but I feel grief. I feel alone. I feel sad. We just don't have that. So making sure you've got community. And again, speaking about that freeze response, wanting to isolate, wanting to shut down. We know that the dorsal vagal is right under the diaphragm. So we know that if that's where your freeze response sits, guess where the next container for your pain is going to be? In your pelvis. So if you can do anything that involves the pelvis, so Kundalini yoga, exercise is where you're releasing, somatic workouts, laying down and just allowing your legs to fall to the side of you, holding space for yourself, compassion, get on YouTube, see what you can look at to just release some of that energy. And again, everything for us sits there. The freeze response sits within the dorsal vagal, and that goes straight into our pelvis. So making sure you're working with your physical. And if you want to get in bed and sleep for the whole holidays, you can do that as well.
Yeah, that's the perfect end note. Like, that's what I was going to say, is like, it's ultimately just another day. It's just been commercialized. It doesn't matter. If you don't want to celebrate it, that's okay. I've spent so many years of my life not in the UK for Christmas. I spent them on beaches. It's never felt like Christmas. My boyfriend works every Christmas day. He has done for the last 20 years. He works in hospitality. Don't feel like you are the only person that's not celebrating. Ultimately, it is just another day. But don't let that driver be from a place of loneliness where you're sat at home and being like, I don't even want to fucking celebrate this stupid day, but you're at home lonely. The house that Stephanie mentions is our premium community area. She's right. It is just full of these amazing, loving, warm, friendly, funny people. Come and join us over there. Like, if you feel lonely this holiday season, I will link that in the show notes. You also get access to so much bonus content, bonus episodes, live stream. I'm sure we'll do a holiday live stream so people in there feel like they're less alone. We've also got a 2-week free trial of the Open app, which is the best breathwork app that I have ever used. We will link that as well. Like Stephanie said, that's where you can work into that diaphragmatic breathing. You can work to calm the amygdala so you don't jump into fight or flight. They have release sessions on there. They have sleep sessions. They have everything that you might need. So we'll link that as your little Christmas gift as well. Most of all, we are here for you, whatever this holiday period holds for you. We hope that it will be full of some small moments of calm, joy, contentment, and happiness. And if you just get a couple of those moments, then maybe that is what the holiday season is all about. But if you don't have those moments, it's okay. You are not alone, and there are going to be many, many more Decembers in years to come where you might have a totally different experience. So Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us. This has been an incredibly helpful episode, and I'm just so grateful that you've joined us.
Thank you, Louise. Just before we go, I do want to just pinpoint something. I'm so sorry. But we have to mention, if you are currently cutting alcohol out of your life and being sober, that is a boundary I would definitely set before going into the holidays. Let people know, this is something I don't want to be encouraged on. I'm happy for other people to drink, but I want to enjoy these holidays sober, drink free, and just let people know this is something I'm not doing right now. Like I said, those are the boundaries. You can explore and be curious with those, but when it comes to alcohol, we are looking for things to control when we feel minimized, when we feel childlike, and that's the easiest thing to go to. And you'll think, I'll just have one, or I'll just have a Bailey's, or you don't have to do that. Let people know before you go into that setting, I am not drinking, so that everyone is aware. Even if you have to get mom, dad, whoever it is, to let everyone else know, it doesn't have to feel shameful. It doesn't have to feel like you are boring or the odd one out. You are prioritizing yourself, and that should be celebrated. And if you are enjoying the holidays truly like you should and resting and slowing down, then your journey has to be the most important thing in how you feel about yourself.
That is actually so important. I'm so happy we touched on that. Yes, stick to your boundaries. Yes, it's okay to not do what everyone else is doing. But also on the flip side, maybe this holiday season will show you, oh goodness, my relationship with substances is not good. And I say this as I must be five and a half years sober now, which is crazy. So this must have been 6-7 years ago. I remember there was a Christmas period and I was in South Africa at my parents' house and I was shit-faced on the bedroom floor, like shit-faced. And I was messaging one of my best friends here. And I just, it was a defining moment for me where I said to her the next day, oh yeah, I'm not really drinking that much. She was like, Louise, you were shit-faced last night. Like, do you not remember texting me? And I went back to the conversation and I was like, oh my God, like that one or two glasses of wine every night just ended up me getting shit-faced again, like using that word for the seventh time, because that was exactly what was happening. And that for me was just such a huge wake-up call. Did I go sober at that point? No, I didn't. I waited another 2.5 months until something really bad happened that I wouldn't wish on anyone. So if you go through a holiday season where you're like, hey, my drinking isn't great, my eating isn't great, my drug taking isn't great, why am I taking drugs around my family? I think we can also use the holiday season as an insight into areas that might need work next year. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And don't forget that there will be a lot of people that, like we said, are going to use alcohol or drugs as an excuse to have uncomfortable conversations or address things with you. Also be aware of your truth and who you are and connecting to yourself. Even if you have to go upstairs and listen to this podcast, just remind yourself that what this person is saying isn't true, or they're fueled by alcohol and insecurity, and be mindful that these people are not really, they're not connected to your sense of self. Your sense of self and everything that you are is within you. If you can anchor some form of self-love and anchor your body in that, you will get through it just fine. And again, if you are alone and you can anchor yourself in self-love, I promise you that you will survive that one day, that 2 days, and you'll get through it and you'll be able to come back to self straight away.
Oh, this is why we could just keep going for hours and hours and hours, because that is so important. That has been my biggest lesson of this year, which is that when we have a weak sense of self, maybe wobbly self-esteem, any criticism from another person we take so intensely, especially if we're anxiously attached, if we have rejection sensitivity, dysphoria, any of these things, we get so upset, which is why everything, all these big fights can erupt. That used to be me. The smallest comment, I would be crying or I'd be angry. Now, a year later, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years later, since starting to do the work, I know that if I'm reasonable and someone says something that I don't agree with, it's okay. Because I know deep inside of me that I'm a good person. I know I'm a reasonable, regulated person. And maybe they just have a view of me from the past. So that is such a good point. And we're going to do more on that next year. How to build that sense of self. How to like yourself, how to trust in yourself, how to be like, yeah, I'm a good person. It doesn't matter what they say. Because God, that did not used to be me. I used to literally take criticism so badly. So you think we're on the same page that we need to do more on that next year?
Absolutely. My favorite question, Louise, when I'm around people that are quite triggering is, where did you learn that? So, you know, if someone's saying, when I was your age, I did this, 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 and this, I'll say, oh, okay. And who taught you that? Or where did you learn that? I love that question. Or you should lighten up and have a drink. Where did you learn that alcohol makes you more fun? Because I feel very fun without alcohol, actually. It's being able to challenge people and say, why are you the way you are? Or why do you have that belief system? And again, like you said, we need to do more on this, that core belief system. Everything you are hearing and seeing is either going to be integrated to support that core belief or challenge that core belief. And you're going to be more aware of the negatives. So no one loves me. I'm a problem child. And then every time you get something wrong or you forget something or someone makes a quick joke at you, you are, again, believing that core belief. Just challenge it. Just say, they need me to be the problem child because they're dysfunctional, or they need this. They need me to be in this position because it allows them to feel better about themselves. So give yourself that bit of confidence and compliment yourself. It's great. And most importantly, just try and enjoy yourself. If you are taking time away from work and it is the end of the year, just try and really enjoy yourself and create some new habits and routines and rituals for yourself, some traditions that you don't have to keep your own family's traditions. You can have your own.
I love that. I think now is the perfect place to end because that was such a good add-on. I feel like I was wrapping up, and then that actually is some of my favorite part of this whole episode. So thank you so much to Stephanie. Thank you to everyone listening. And we are wishing you happy holidays, but also we are here for you every day of the week, every month of the year. We are here. We are your support team, and we're so excited to do next year with you. So thank you so much for listening to us this year. It's been a pleasure to be on here with Stephanie, and we will see you all very soon.